All right, we will go on to case number 064217, the United States versus Rusinski. Good morning,
Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Ann Hannigan of the firm of Metchick Goldberg, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellant, Marta Rusinski. Today we're here based on a violation of her Fifth Amendment right to be charged of a specific offense by an indictment. Basically, we have two arguments. First is that the district court constructively amended the superseding indictment when it allowed an instruction that failed to properly explain to the jury that the government was required to prove the defendant intended to distribute an amount in excess of 350 grams of methamphetamine.
You're really swimming upstream with this because let me put it this way. The cases that you have cited all involve cases in which the proof at trial went beyond the indictment. It was a different gun. It was a different false statement. There was something more and different, whereas contained within distribution of 350 grams or 450 grams, whichever one you want to use, is distribution of 5 grams. I mean, you've been put on notice of everything, you know, from an appreciable amount on up to the amount in the indictment. And particularly after Booker, after Apprendi, after this whole line of cases developed, for sentencing purposes, to create the correct band of sentencing exposure, the government has to put these amounts in, but if it's not going to rely on the possibility of a higher sentence, those amounts are not important.
Well, the government had originally sought an indictment. The original indictment was in excess of distribution and intent to distribute in excess of 50 grams.
Right, and that would have limited it to the subpart C sentencing range, which is 20 years. And by going up to 350, I believe it moved itself into the 40-year sentencing range. But since she only winds up getting a sentence of 120 months, the shift doesn't matter, right? The fact that the jury never finds the amount doesn't matter if the government's content not to push the envelope on sentencing.
Well, Your Honor, there was testimony by the defense expert, Dr. Wahlstrom, that the majority of the drugs were for personal use and were not to be distributed.
But don't our decisions like Bjorkman make clear that the drug quantity is not a true element of the... it's relevant for establishing sentencing minimums and maximums after Apprendi, and that's why we've said that the drug quantity should be alleged in the indictment. But once you had Ms. Rusinski waiving her right to a jury finding quantity for sentencing purposes, there was no longer any need for the government to even a specific quantity.
Well, our argument is that quantity, we concede, is not an essential element of the crime, but in this case, we're arguing that the modifying language used by the government in the superseding indictment, namely that she possessed with intent, in quote, in excess of 350 grams of methamphetamine, that required the government to... that made it an essential element of the crime.
But isn't all that really was necessary be that she was proven to have possessed with the intent to distribute a measurable quantity of meth? And beyond that, the quantity allegation in the indictment probably becomes surplusage.
Well, under the government's theory, she could have used 349 grams for personal use and only distributed 1 gram, and she would be guilty.
Well, that's right, I'm afraid.
You got it.
We're arguing that by using the words of limitation in the superseding indictment, the government made the amount of meth an essential element and restricted the basis of conviction to proof of intent to distribute in excess of 350. The Fifth Amendment provides no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. Courts have consistently forbid any constructive amendment of the indictment by the trial evidence or jury instructions. A constructive amendment is reversible per se because there is no assurance it matches the offense charged. The superseding indictment charged that defendant knowingly and intentionally attempted to possess with intent to distribute a controlled substance, namely in excess of 350 grams of meth. Instructive is the case of U.S. v. Lichtenum on page 8 of the brief, where, as Your Honor stated, extra language was included in an indictment making a particular gun an element of the charge and limiting the basis of conviction
but
to that.
As I said, that one is where they present a different gun. And here, if you have 350 grams, inherent in having 350 grams is having 10 grams. I mean, it's a subset as opposed to a different set of activity.
But the indictment does say attempt to distribute in excess of 350 grams.
Right. And so you could also be distributing less than more than 350 grams, if you will. I mean, the question is that language, as Judge Rovner says, surplusage from the point of view of elements of the crime, or is it something where the government has actually only charged the greater and not the lesser? And I don't see any cases cited in your brief from the drug world or from any other line of cases where the government successfully proves something less than the indictment charges. You're trying to say more than the indictment charges is bad, and I agree with that. But what about less?
Well, we would argue that it denied defendant her Fifth Amendment right to be charged by indictment of a particular offense.
You want to save rebuttal time?
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Drury.
Good morning. May it please the court. Your Honors, the district court properly instructed the jury on the elements of a violation of Title 21, United States Code, Section 846, attempted possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute. Specifically, in accord with the pattern jury instructions from this circuit, the district court instructed the jury that in order to convict the defendant, the government had to prove two elements. First, that the defendant knowingly and intentionally attempted to possess methamphetamine, and second, that the defendant attempted to possess that methamphetamine with the intent to distribute it.
How little do you think an appreciable quantity of methamphetamine could be?
Your Honor, the instruction that we proposed was a measurable amount of methamphetamine.
But really, what
does that mean?
What does that mean in the case of methamphetamine? I mean, a measurable amount of methamphetamine would depend on whether you were somebody who had a home chemistry lab and you could measure out, you know, a nanogram or I mean, what does this really mean?
Your Honor, in these cases, if methamphetamine is recovered by DEA, as it was in this case, DEA would send it to a lab and the lab would determine whether of methamphetamine.
So 100 milligrams? I mean, at what point would, let's say, let me phrase this another way, would the amount be so tiny that you would consider it not a distribution amount? I know it's not this. I understand there's a pound, 450 grams or so involved here, but there's an amount that would be so small.
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question. At what point does it become immeasurable in terms of
having or just so clearly a personal consumption amount? Now, actually, Ms. Rusinski's argument's a little different. She says, yes, I have 450 grams, but I was planning on consuming the vast majority of it, and I wasn't really planning contributing much, if any.
Your Honor, to get to the beginning portion of your question, at what point does an amount become just an amount to use for possession? I don't know that that question could be answered because whoever has the methamphetamine may want to sell whatever quantity. I think it depends on the intent of the person who has the methamphetamine. They may have one crystal of meth, Your Honor, and they may want to sell that because they want nothing to do with it, but they need $5.
Isn't it a different crime? I mean, wouldn't it be a different crime if you know, she takes a hundredth of a gram and...
Your Honor, the crime would be the same if her intent in getting...
If she sells a hundredth of a gram and... Your Honor, swallows all the rest? Or
the crime would be the same. The sentence may be different. The crime would still be attempted possession in this case because it was an attempt. Attempted possession of a controlled substance with the intent to distribute. If she intended to use the rest of it, then that would be possession, and that's what the defense was arguing. Contrary to what the defendant has said, the jury instruction have two elements. It's the law in this circuit, and drug quantity does not become an element of the offense, even if the government puts it in.
But it is odd, you know, immeasurable.
Odd as it may be, in this case, Your Honor, that instruction wasn't even given, actually. The government asked for that instruction, and after the colloquy with the defendant, the Honorable Judge Gettleman said that instruction is not necessary because I think it's encompassed in the general instruction of the elements.
The bit about her waiver of her Apprendi rights? You mean she just... says, look, it's 350 or nothing.
I think she actually said it was 400.
Or 450 or nothing, yeah.
The government wanted, Your Honors, you may recall from the record, the government had the Apprendi instruction, check this box. The defendant didn't want that. The government then said, okay, we would want this measurable quantity amount and keep the 350 grams in the indictment because we had actually proposed to redact the indictment so the quantity wasn't in there, so it wasn't an issue. Defense objected to that. It then got to the point where Judge Gettleman was going to have the boxes and have the measurable amount quantity. Then he said, but can't this all go away if Ms. Ruchinsky just says that the amount at issue is 450 grams. There was discussion with counsel that's clear in the record. It came back. There was a colloquy with Ms. Ruchinsky and Mr. Hill. She waived that right. So in the end, the only instruction that went in was the standard pattern instruction from this circuit, which are the elements that I've already stated. And then the court said that the government can argue based on that instruction, which is what the government did. So based on everything I've said here today, Your Honors, and the further arguments we put forth in the brief, the government respectfully requests that you affirm the conviction below.
Thank you, Mr. Drury. Thank you, sir. And again.
The language in the superseding indictment limited the possible basis of conviction to attempted possession with intent to distribute meth in excess of 350 grams and not some lesser amount. The district court instructed the jury that the government was not required to prove the amount defendant intended to distribute. This greatly prejudiced the defendant, who contended at trial that the vast majority of the meth was intended for personal use, and the defense employed an expert who corroborated this theory. If the jury believed this argument, they could have acquitted on the charge of possession with intent to distribute. The government's comments that they were not required to prove the particular amount of meth was improper and denied defendant a right to a fair trial. Over defense counsel objection, the prosecutor was allowed to tell the jury that drug amount need not be proven. In this case, the government did not merely make mention of the drug quantity. It conveyed that the government would prove at trial that she possessed with intent to deliver specifically in excess of 350 grams of meth. The government chose the wording of the indictment. The government has the power to make an otherwise innocuous term an essential element of the crime. In this case, the amount became essential, and the superseding indictment was constructively amended by the jury instruction and the closing arguments. We would ask that Ms. Ruchinsky's case be reversed and remanded for a new trial.
Thank you, Ms. Panik. Thank you to both counsel. Case will be taken under advisement.